Good morning, everyone. I know, well, we don't know when you're going to be listening, but here it is Saturday morning. We're in the, as you can see, we're testing the live on Periscope. We're in the $1 million flight test studio here.
Waking people up with Mike
and Wayne, and we got Andre on the line.
Good morning.
And so if you guys are getting your Periscope alerts, you know, it's 6 in the morning or 7 in the morning or whatever. Yes, that's us.
11 o'clock here in Australia.
Mike's already had 2 cans of Mountain Dew with 4 donuts.
Oh, yeah.
So we are raring to go.
Looky there.
So what's going on? I haven't really talked to you guys too much. I know we've been busy. Wayne, you got a million things probably going on. It's looking good, though,
and
right?
None of it's flight related. That's the best. Well, right. No, not really.
Yeah?
Because my new house has 2.5 acres and places to fly.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. So that field and everything, looks fantastic.
Yeah.
So, Mike, how's it going?
Got some flying in. Got a lot of things to share.
Good.
Looking forward to today.
Well, we finally got Andre up. He's got his coffee. He's starting to talk a little bit.
Good morning. Yes.
As he was texting us at 11 o'clock last
night. Yeah, last night.
Go to bed, Andre.
Yeah, you too. I'm laying there half asleep. I'm like, my phone's going ding, ding. My wife's just looking at me. I'm like,
throw the phone out the window.
Go to bed. Go to bed.
Go to bed. Yep.
So that was funny. All kinds of stuff to talk about today. This is going to be the crash story podcast today. So we got tons of crash stories. Hopefully you like it. If you don't, some people are like, crash stories, whatever. But this is what it is. It's a crash story podcast.
So I got some personal stories.
Yeah, we have some personal stuff that when we were out flying here a couple weeks ago. One thing too about the crash stories, please keep sending them in. I love to read them personally. But what we're probably going to do is, you can only, get so many, emails of a plane, crashing into a tree or whatever. So I'm going to kind of sort through them a little bit if it's quite a spectacular crash, or the other thing is if we learn something from it, you do something stupid like we all do.
Actually encountered one firsthand.
Yeah. So I'm just going to sort through them a little bit, and we're going to do it that way. But please send them in, because I still no matter what, I still like to read them, and I like hear the crash stories. So hey, first thing up, real quick, probably on the next podcast, there are a ton of planes that have come out here, whether it be Hobby King or I know Horizons put out a ton of stuff. So probably next podcast, we're going to do a kind of like a product review of everything coming up. But we have to talk about, or at least mention it a little bit, is we know that Horizon Hobby came out with the updated version of the Radian.
Yes.
Which is now called the E-Flight Radian.
Carbon Z.
Yeah, I don't understand.
I don't know.
It said, obviously, I think it's got the same motor, servos, ESC. They did say they strengthened up the fuselage and the wings. Mm-hmm. I was kind of hoping maybe, if they were going for that carbon Z thing, that they were going to do maybe like the hollow wings. I don't think that's the case.
No.
Because I was looking at the weight. The weight's still exactly the same.
And they said you can also use the parts off the old Radian on a lot of that stuff, too.
Yeah,
so
right.
Looks like the clevises on the back and stuff, they changed over to the good ones instead of those screws and things.
Bolt-on wings, Mike.
Bolt-on wings.
That for my aerobatic gliding flight.
Which, personally, I like the old style better. It's so quick and easy to slide. And if your wings start getting a little loose, I just take just a little bit of tape, maybe put a couple sections of tape around the spar, and it's just as tight.
Yeah.
So, and even on the wings, you can do the same thing.
I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
On the spar, it's snug, too.
Or just on the inner edge of the wing, you can just put a little piece of tape all the way around, and then wings get all tight, and you have no problem. So, mm-hmm. I have
the magnet mod.
Yeah, or the magnet mod. Yeah, people are doing that, too. So, I have a little mixed emotions with that, because I dealt with that with the Radian Pro.
Right.
Getting that in and doing the screw, and so, I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of interested to see what they actually did with strengthening it, if they ran some carbon down the, I don't know. The other funny thing is, and I'm not 100% on this, and I could be way off, is like you said too, they've changed the clevises on it. I think the original Radian, if I could be wrong, when it first came out, was only like 28 ounces. And I don't know if it's because maybe they got the newer metal can motor and they changed some little things around, if it actually went up to 31 ounces now, because I know the new one that just come out is 31 ounces. But I was almost positive mine, even when I did weigh it, it was only like 28 ounces. So maybe with that little bit of stuff they did, it went up in weight a little bit, which I don't think is going to affect the flying characteristics.
Not that thing.
No, no. Mm. So we are all excited. I want to see one in person and check it out.
Well, the fact now that, you know, it used to be that, oh, no, if we crash it, you know, how are you going to replace this thing if it was possible? So at least we have an avenue.
Yeah, yeah, right,
at least,
right.
Even if your wings, 9 times out of 10, the wings should be okay. It's the fuse you're going to crunch, mm-hmm, right?
So. Correct, yeah. And again, I'm a little disappointed because, you know, we were really hoping for that 100-inch, yeah, you know, radian.
Yeah, but they're not done.
Yeah, you know,
come on, Matt.
Yeah.
Yeah, when they put carbon Z, I got all excited.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
Punch the wings out, but it's, I think carbon Z now just refers to their foam technology.
That could be. That could be to the Z foam. I guess too, maybe they were working on a new design. Again, I'm throwing this. This is just me thinking. Maybe they have been trying to work on something. It was kind of like the older Parkzone F4U. Is you were trying to get a new design out, but kept mm-hmm. coming back to the same design because they couldn't
improve
beat it.
On it. Yeah.
Couldn't get it any better.
Right.
So yeah. I don't know. It is what it is. But we'll see what happens.
Or maybe just from our gestures, they thought, you know what, we better get this out of there.
So the other thing I wanted to mention real quick, Andre, you can talk more about because I haven't even been on it yet. I kind of feel bad, but there's a podcast forum now on the flight test website, correct?
Yes. I spoke to Austin about that one, and then I had Fred. Good morning, Fred. I had him set something up, and what we want to do is to continue the conversation because I noticed after we had finished the chat about Flight Fest, there was no way for people outside of emailing you guys directly to submit, you know, photos and stuff like this. So I figured, well, you know what, it works really well with the article section. So mm-hmm. we put that in there, and we will continue to try and populate it whenever we post a podcast. And Mark from MultiRC loved it because right away he was able to get in there and say, you know, put in a few comments about his product. And there was even there was some point where someone was talking to him back about, you know, his ESCs and a back setup that could be a battery elimination circuit, which could be a little better. So right away the benefits are being seen for us. So we're going to continue the conversation at that point. So.
Oh, good, good. So I'll have to hop on there and browse around a little bit every now and then, see what's going on in there.
There's literally two posts. One saying we're doing it, and then our most recent podcast, and that's about it. So
okay, all right. Hey, just a couple things too. Usually during the week or during, you know, after work or something, I get on, always see what's going on in the industry and stuff. And usually, I know you usually send me the crazy stuff is the stuff that goes on with the, you know, drones.
Oh, yeah.
But what I like to do is find some of the good stuff or even sometimes some of the funny stuff. And
now, as far as the goofy stuff, did you see where that airline pilot said, oh, come on, this is overblown hype?
Yes.
So this is from a commercial airline pilot. So I was like, come on, guys. That I was like, finally, somebody on our side.
Right. And I got that on my notes, and I'm going to actually read that.
Hit it.
Here in a second. But the first thing I wanted to talk about, and I don't know if you guys seen this, it was kind of all over. A gentleman was out, and it looked like from the video it was an Inspire. He was out fishing. He was,
well, well, to maybe. Fly fishing.
Okay.
He was, I don't know, out on the coast somewhere flying the Inspire.
It was in California.
Flying around a pier and everything. Well, this fisherman, did you see this?
Yeah.
This fisherman was not happy with him flying around, and it was a lucky shot.
Yeah.
He turned around and seen that thing and just fired that fishing pole, and somehow he got up over and it wrapped around the propeller.
Yeah.
And I think if it wasn't an Inspire, something that big and that powerful, I don't think he would have made it.
Yeah.
But luckily that thing wound around the motor and probably just snapped the line and the guy got it back. And it was a pretty big story, but the video is cool. You see the guy come right over, he whips that fishing pole right over there. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it.
I like how they highlighted his mugshot. Yeah. After this guy.
Yeah.
It's funny.
There was another story. I didn't actually write it down, but I thought it was it's kind of bad press. But I guess a guy was flying somewhere around a beach or whatever, and a guy got upset and went after it and threw his shirt at it, mm-hmm. and got a hold of it, hit it, and it crashed. Well, the guy called the police. The guy that threw the shirt, they took him to jail over.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Which I was kind of shocked about that. But, they took him to jail for obstruction of something private. I don't know.
Right.
But anyway, I just thought the fishing thing was pretty funny. The other thing kind of blew me away is, and I was kind of hoping Chad would be here a little bit to talk more about this FPV racing thing is starting really explode. And the one thing that really caught me was I got it here somewhere. The Miami Dolphins owner is going to fork over $1 million to get.
Was it a million or a million and a half? I can't remember.
I think it was a million.
I think it was a million.
I got the story here.
I remember reading over it briefly.
Here it is. Okay. Bear with me just a quick second. Phone's like a little slow. Owner of the Miami Dolphins just made drone racing a $1 million sport. Drone racing might be getting ready for the prime time. Real estate developer Miami Dolphins owner Stephen Ross has invested $1 million into the Drone Racing League, a New York startup looking to bring live drone racing to the public. The league hopes to create success that offer fast twitch sports it had in recent years. X Games is now a biannual competition broadcast live on ESPN in the U.S. and eSports. With drone racing has been compared to and are now watched by over 89 million people across the world. The DRL held a test event earlier this year in an abandoned power plant in Yonkers and plans to have its first public race later this year, according to the journal. He said, I felt drone racing could be a sport that resonated with people because it touches on heritage of racing, but also brings in the benefits of new technology. First person view drone racing where racers build small, can get the speeds up to 70 mile an hour. It has crashes, got video live feeds, drones itself, combining aspects of NASCAR, Formula One, virtual reality gaming into one sport. So it goes on and on and on, but I thought that was, mm-hmm. guy just out of the blue says, $1 million.
Yeah. Yep. That's next on Fox Sports Live.
Yeah.
No.
All right. Let's go back to what you were talking about, Wayne, which was, and actually I got mm-hmm. this from Eric Monroe. He's the one that actually posted it and brought it to my attention, but I was reading through it and thought it was pretty good. Fear of drones crashing into passengers' plane is much to do about nothing, says airline pilot. A commercial pilot with over 30 years experience claims the threat of drones crashing into aircraft is much to do about nothing. He points out how hundreds of mostly harmless annual bird strikes dwarfs the number of drone sightings made by pilots. Chris Mano, a former U.S. Air Force pilot who is now a captain for American Airlines, published a blog post which blamed some media outlets for using drone sightings and the threat they pose to aircraft as a form of fear-mongering.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Where have we heard that before?
Exactly. Mano explains how bird strikes happen hundreds of times each year, but because they rarely cause damage, they are no longer considered newsworthy. What's new is an opportunity for media and aviation pundits to claim more screaming headlines by overstating the drone hazard. Although the media and some wannabe aviation pundits claim there are drones of 50 to 60 pounds, the fact is the new popular hobbyist drone are marvels of lightweight miniaturization. Thank you, Andre. Weighing a fraction of that, popular drones like the Phantom Range by DJI weigh around 1.2 kilograms or 2.6 pounds. Mano says there are so many bird strikes each year that by contrast to the rare but more interesting drone sightings, they are simply no longer adding. He said the traveling public and thus the media understand the exposure, accepting it, and like the National Highway Traffic Safety death toll, they ignore it. Hobby drones, which in some cases fly at more than 1,500 feet, can be controlled through a video link to a smartphone or tablet in the pilot's control, have surged in popularity over the last 12 months. So, too, has a number of incidents where drones and other model aircraft have stayed too close to the airports. In one case, a model helicopter came within 20 feet of a plane landing at London Heathrow. And it kind of goes on a little bit more from there. Mano admits that engine damage is possible when hitting birds or drones, but again, argues against the misguided drone hysteria, saying, of all the birds, man-made or real, populating the skies around every major airport, drones are a minuscule fraction of the whole group that the air travel's sensibility overlook day to day. So that's really pretty much it, Driss. But, you know, it's just a fact that...
We pointed out in earlier podcasts about how Goose is probably the most drones.
And here's the thing. I actually still have the pictures at home on one of the... Well, I won't say what plane, but somebody you may know, Mike... company you may work for, may not work for, Pat Humbert, who's on the podcast every now and then, he had a goose strike,
right,
and brought in the pictures and showed them. Holy cow, the damage that thing done. I couldn't believe it.
Remember the hail from last week?
That airplane, I heard about that. I didn't see it. So I just thought that was good and interesting that finally, at least one of these guys, maybe he's into the hobby and realize, you know, because even a regular airline pilot, if he's not into the hobby and he's not informed on this, you know, and maybe thinks he's seen a drone and freaks out, and because they really, you know, they're not informed, they don't know.
Oh, no.
Or this guy, he might, sounds like he might kind of be involved.
He knew what was going on with it.
And he's like, you guys are just idiots, you know. and with the media, you know, hyping everything up, so.
I like that article. Defended us a little bit.
Yeah, I like that too. So that was just a few things I've caught here in the last couple weeks. I thought were rather interesting or funny or something like
that. What did you think about that that 3DR article?
Oh, you know, I almost was going to bring that up, but I guess heck with it. We'll talk about it a little bit. I wish I would have. If you have the article, you can even. I've talked to a few people that have the Solos. Actually, I seen one in Best Buy yesterday. Mm-hmm. I know they're having some problems with it, and I know I talked to Chad here recently.
Oh, really? Because I saw it in his basement, and I'm like, I couldn't believe he purchased one.
He's admitted.
I criticized him on it too.
He's admitted he's had some problems with it. If you can pull it up there, Andre, real quick. There was a comp. Oh, that came to. Oh, hang on. All right. A company did like a little review thing on it, and it wasn't...
There you go.
All right. I didn't get it on my phone.
Oh, I did read through that. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We're going there. This is by drone. This is by Drone Flyers. Now, again, I've seen it in person, and we've seen a few of the problems in person.
Yeah.
I'm not... Now, I hate to bag on them too bad. This is my, before we get into it too much, this is my personal opinion. DJI kind of went through the same thing. Mm-hmm. When they first come out and they first had the Phantoms and the Visions, they were having, I just got your message, Andre, now. you know, they were kind of having the same problems. So I like some of the features and some of the things that the 3DR is doing. But again, they're in that first stage in the learning process. And I think they're realizing, you know, they do have some problems. And I think down the road, it's going to work themselves out. But the problem is they don't really seem to be admitting them. Right. I think that's a problem. Yeah. So this company here did a little review and was talking about it. So we'll read a little bit through her. Let's see. 3DR Robotics announced the new Solo quadcopter in April. And again, I think that was their other problem is they were still working on this thing. And when DJI announced they had the new Phantom 3 come out, I think 3DR was like, oh, crap.
Yeah,
we've got to get this thing out and get it marketed kind of either. Actually, they got it out right before the Phantom 3. Mm-hmm. And then they were pushing it really hard. I mean, this thing was everywhere. It was on the news and blah, blah. So I think that was their first mistake.
Yep.
And I just heard they just now got the gimbals out for it. And I think you're going to see it drop in price. Yeah. Again, that's just my personal opinion. Because I don't think that you can't compete with the Phantom 3 at that price.
No.
You know. Okay, so the quadcopter released in April 2015 set the world abuzz. The company claimed this model was far superior to any other camera gimbal on the market. Claims include the world's first smart drone, can do anything other drones does and more. Every other drone will be looked at as a toy by the end of the year. Solo does 175 things better than the other drones, presumably DJI, the market leader. 3DR, the maker of the Solo, will control the market instead of current leader DJI. With claims like these and many more, expectations were high for a truly groundbreaking product. The drone world awaited the launch of the Solo, which was scheduled to be in stores in time for delivery for Dad's Day, Father's Day, 2015. Then it happened. Solo introduced with shortcomings to defects and not only lacks smarts, but in our opinion is not ready for sale to the public for its intended use. Since we don't want to write a book yet on the Solo, I'll lay the facts and opinions out and let readers make what they want of it. Our initial thoughts on the Solo before the release. When all these claims were made about the Solo, we looked carefully at the specs and price. What we saw was a model which used the older fisheye, wide-angle GoPro cameras and seemed overpriced compared to the competition. Also, we were suspect whether 3DR, a company with no experience or history in consumer products, would even bring the basic model to market in such a way as to provide competition for the existing players. To put the price into perspective, here is a basic comparison of some of the popular consumer quadcopters. And we did a comparison of the two, and we totally agree 100%. It was the same thing. So you have the DJI Phantom 3 Advance, $1,000 complete, camera and gimbal. Unique Q500, including some extras in the case, is $1,100 to $1,250, but has a camera, gimbal, holder, etc. Blade Chroma, $1,100 with remote, tablet built-in, camera and gimbal. Parrot Bebop with Sky Controller, $899 with a stabilized camera and quadcopter. One through three above are closer in comparisons than the Bebop. However, the Solo with a GoPro, silver, and a gimbal would cost $1,800, which we looked into. That's a big difference. But if 3DR delivered a near-perfect machine, it may be worthwhile to subset of the buyers, especially those who already had a GoPro. 3DR offered a promise of a money-back guarantee, unheard of in the business, as well as claims they were setting up superior customer service, which that really was DJI's big thing. They've gotten better, but that was one of their big problems. In summary, it was difficult to see what the advantages of the Solo were. Many of the claims lacked anything specific and were more P.T. Barnum than fact. At the same time, we saw that 3DR had a loyal customer base and a following. This may have allowed them to take 10% of the market, which would represent up to 100,000 Solo sales in the next year. Not bad for the first consumer drone. Now, they went to the release. After all the hoopla, orders piled in. 3DR, as well as their vendors, pre-sold thousands of Solos, and the rumor were up to 30,000 were going to be sold quickly. A nice start. Father's Day alone could represent thousands of initial sales, and pre-orders from existing drone pilots also added up, which Best Buy had a big thing. I think I got a thing in my email through Best Buy. I said, hey, pre-order the Solo. Alas, the Solo and gimbal were not available at launch date, so 3DR made a fateful decision to release the Solo without the stabilizing gimbal. In other words, they were selling a quadcopter without a camera or a gimbal for the same price their competitors sell a complete unit. Additionally, the Solo, at any price, could not even be used for what its intended purpose was.
Yep.
Which we talked about. Right, like, why would you even release? It's just a normal quad at that point. Line of sight. You can go get like a leftover Blade QX3 for now. I think they had them for $500.
Right.
Put a GoPro on it. It's going to do exactly the same thing for half the price. So I that blew me away. Let's see. Without getting into a lot of inside baseball, many customers were upset when some buyers walked into Best Buy and purchased a Solo. While the Solo they pre-ordered from 3DR took an extra month or more to show up at their door, they were left wondering why they bothered to pre-order, since they did not only have a stable camera gimbal, but they didn't even have a Solo. Still, customers believed in 3DR and most did not cancel their orders. The Solos, minus the gimbal, started to be delivered, set up, and flown. And then the crashes and other problems started.
Right.
So,
okay. The defects. Detailing all the problems with a Solo would take too long. However, suffice to say that a large percentage of the users have experienced problems. Many appear to be related to very poor implement of GPS. This is a very big deal, since the entire idea of this machine is based on GPS. Without a perfect system, all the hype features will simply not work. Worse yet, even basic flight will not work, something which be verified by a large number of crashes, flips, and other accidents. Without very reliable GPS, as good or better than the other models currently available, the Solo becomes useless. In fact, it's worse than useless due to the possible accidents and injuries, and well as costly repairs. Early on, DroneFlyers.com guessed that the problem was a GPS module being designed and installed incorrectly. Other similar quadcopters place a GPS in a small mast, bump, or otherwise centered above the machine so it can acquire GPS signals from all directions, including very low on the horizon. In addition, other models use a dual GPS system, which relies on both USA and Russian satellites to acquire a much better and more reliable signal, which is what all the new new ones are doing. I know the Phantom 3 for sure. Like now when you pull it up, like on a Phantom 3, it'll say you got 19 satellites,
right.
You know, which is unheard of. Let's see. Users report. Here's another thing. Solo uses only the USA GPS and has hidden the GPS in a location where the battery may block the signal from various angles. Users report difficulty in obtaining GPS and loss of signal when they walk by Solo or when something as small as a single tree overshadows it. It simply does not happen with current reliable GPS technology. And they got a little picture of the Blade Chroma, which, and my Blade same way, has a, you know, it's got a mask comes up. It's clear on top, away from everything. Some in the field had the following comments. 3DR implemented of the uBlock 7 GPS and the GPS patch antenna is an inferior design. Comment from industry consultant who had third-party expert study on the study Solo. Based on geographical area that you were flying, it appears it be caused by the trees surrounding your Solo that were casting a shadow over your vehicle. Comment from 3DR support expert. A number of users had crashes which are believed to be linked to the poor GPS as the way that it's being handled. Comment from UAV website blogger. I crashed my Solo yesterday, I believe for a similar reason. Mine just went into a rogue vertical accelerated motion, most likely GPS loss. Now they say, also, although the GPS seems the largest deficiency, there are numerous other shortcomings in the Solo. Here are some we listed. Weak wireless signals causing dropout in very short range, which I know I talked to Chad. He said sometimes he can get 200 feet out and he's been losing signal with it.
And we saw that at Flight Fest.
We saw it at Flight Fest, which and we thought maybe that was just because it was so noisy but apparently not. That wasn't the case. Low return to home. It's set at 49 feet and no adjustable by the user. This has resulted in many pilots running into trees and other obstacles when the Solo goes into automatic return to home mode, which I didn't know about that.
On the APM one, I can set mine in the stock setting is 100 feet. So at least you know you're going to clear stuff.
Yeah, and most of them are all adjustable. You know, depending on where you fly, you can change. You know, change. If you're out in the middle of the desert, you can put it at 50 feet. You know, if you're out in the middle of the woods, you want 100 feet. That's just common sense there. Programming. There seems to be a programming mistake which causes more harm to the machine and potentially to the public. A crashed or flipped Solo would continue to run its motors, causing motor burnout and other problems. Similar machines usually know when to shut off. It's worth noting that most smartphones and other such devices have had dual GPS for a few years now, and the experts in the field consider them much more reliable than a single USA only. If you'd like to read the test of the founder of a leading GPS antenna company, check this. All right. These problems started surfacing immediately after the Solo launch and affected many of the first owners. Instead of stopping or delaying shipments, 3DR and their supporters took to the attitude of the BTC, blame the customer, and immediately started defending Solo and criticizing the pilots who had issues. Even 3DR engineers jumped into the fray, agreeing online, Facebook, etc., that some of their customers were idiots and should learn how to fly properly.
That's harsh.
Now here's what I want to say to that.
Yeah.
They were claiming when this thing first came out that this was the easiest, best camera platform on the market, and anybody can fly it.
Yep.
So then when they started having problems, now the pilots are idiots. That really kind of irritates me a little bit. Okay. I lost where I was. Despite Solo having been clearly marketed towards beginners, a well as clearly buggy in various ways. Among the claims, 3DR-related developers and fans were that the defect rate was 0.03%, a figure that would only mean 2 out of the 4,000 Solo shipped were having problems. Despite the fact that dozens were reporting crashes and other problems as only a few had been actually flown, the same defense continues to this day, July 2015, as 3DR refuses to publicly accept and state that the problems are not with the pilots but with the hardware and software of the Solo. It's one thing to miss a target of launching a successful drone, quite another display unbound arrogance in the faces of facts. 3DR, in my opinion, needs adult supervision. Okay, the gimbal. Well, let's wait a minute. Yeah, let's go on to there. As stated above, the Solo was introduced incomplete and not capable of being used for the purpose design. Even if it had worked, customers were led to believe that the gimbal would be available soon after launch, a few weeks at most, and definitely by the beginning of the summer season. Instead, being honest with their customers, 3DR played the game of stringing them along, and this continues to the present. The first gimbal release dates were reportedly in late June. Then when nothing surfaced, 3DR reacted by posting long, rambling descriptions of the gimbal development process and claimed it would be shipping in late July, assuring customers they had built a buffer into the time frame so it would be easy done then than earlier. Late July has come and gone, and the word from various sources now say the gimbal may not start to ship until Labor Day. New orders are likely to be delayed until October. Factory now says 8 weeks for new orders. Man. But they did say, like I said, on the post, they did claim it just come out, but that's probably just for the pre-order people. 3DR, in my opinion, marketing the Solo in a fool-the-customer fashion, while exaggeration is nothing new in terms of this hobby. The advertising of a drone at a much lower price than what it takes to actually use it. The Solo has been marketed and written about due to the 3DR-produced PR and costing $9.99. This being done in an attempt to draw the buyers who would likely pass over the machine if they understood the real price, which was about double that amount. Which, when I first seen it come out, I thought the same thing. Wow, $9.99, that's pretty good. But then, you know, when you look at the Solo, $1,000, you pay $400 extra for the gimbal, and then you buy a $400 GoPro if you don't have one, and $150 for an extra battery. That's almost $2,000.
Yeah. Yep.
You know. One comparison is the DJI Phantom 3. Costs $1,150 plus tax. Equipped with a camera, gimbal, two batteries, as well as a superior range and GPS, and others are in the same price range of around $200. The future, it is an open question as to whether Solo will ever be successful as is. The current investors in 3DR are well aware of the problems and are insisting on a machine which is capable of doing what they claim. We don't have a crystal ball, yet often the best indication of the future is gained by looking at the past. If 3DR released something this poor, who can lead them to produce something better? It seems not just a mistake or two, but a pervasive problem with their company. It's likely they will fix the glaring problems and come up with the gimbal delivery starting mid-August. But it may take months to catch up on the back orders and perfect the parts of the system. Other companies in the meantime are forging ahead, things moving very quickly in this industry. The best advice we can give them is take another look in perhaps 6 months or early 2016 to see if vast improvements have been made. This is a view shared by other experts in our field, such as Evan Lewis, Drone Dude, and Jim Bowers. Sorry to say, folks, but in our opinion, Solo is currently a no-go. Unless you want to spend your time hacking, modifying, discussing ways around the problems, as opposed to flying and taking pictures, stay away from this bird for now. Even perfected, it would appear to mimic older technology and be overpriced compared to its competitors.
Yikes, eh?
Yeah. See, that sounds to me like a company that is basically run and listened to by salesmen and people who are just out to make a quick buck instead of listening to the engineers and the techs. And really, because this is stupid, because in this industry, people talk. You got forum after forum. People will research it. Okay, it may look cool. You may have all, and you put it out there. And if that thing doesn't fly, if it has that many problems, that word is going to get around, and your business is going to go down.
Yep.
This is a PR nightmare.
Yeah, and this is exactly what we talked about earlier, where a company goes like this mainstream in the Best Buys and puts anybody that can walk in that store to buy one.
Yep.
And if they have these kind of problems,
right,
and they don't have the knowledge and the resources to know what to do, where to fly, and all that stuff, and they go out, somebody gets hurt. Yep.
This is what's going to hurt our hobby, this kind of junk right here.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's what I'm afraid of.
And that's why I'll get angry, is because of the fact that these guys are trying to cover their butt, They're not taking ownership, and that makes it even worse. Yeah. If there's that many people online, and I mean, I just pulled up Amazon that's selling it, and one of the most helpful reviews on it, this guy just rips it apart, and then he's trying to return it, and they're just goofing him one way or the other.
Yeah,
and it's like, okay, you do that, and then you call the people who buy them and fly them idiots.
Yeah,
are you kidding me?
Not right. Everyone in this hobby. Is
idiot, oh, let me tell you. Oh no, you're going to call the wrong person an idiot, and they're going to be some of the experts. Out there,
oh, man.
And you just watch there. If they don't fix this, if they don't fix their customer support and their view on who's buying their very overpriced junk, they're going to be short-lived company.
Yeah, I totally agree. They need to do something. I mean, right away.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like slamming somebody.
No, I don't either.
But when you call. The people are spending their hard-earned money to buy your product, and you turn around and call them idiots?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're marketing your product as dummy-proof.
Yes.
If I'm 3DR, that guy that called them idiots would be unemployed right at this minute.
Well, probably...
And the salespeople who pushed to have this thing released so quick.
And it's probably the owner, Chris Anderson, which everybody knows he doesn't like the RC industry anyway. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess, you know, I wasn't going to bring it up.
That's a black mark. Sure. And so, on the counterpart, the Phantom 3, I'll just throw in my little tidbit. Chad left me fly his Phantom 3. Oh, my gosh. You talk about dummy proof. This thing. I mean, if he gives me the sticks, I'm like, okay, this thing must be able to fly itself because I don't get the sticks.
Yeah. And so it came back?
Oh, my God. Exactly. Yes. You lose signal. There's even a button to land the thing. You just push one button, and it goes right back to landing. It to me, was phenomenal. And I don't think it's overpriced for all the features it has.
Does it have a tree avoidance system on it?
Well, I mean, he was just showing me things. It had the Google Maps. It was tracking the flight path. I mean, oh, there were so many things I just loved about that product. Yeah. I could not believe it. And I only had just minimal exposure to it. I was only flying it for a couple minutes or whatever. The stability, oh, rock solid. It was like hanging it up in the sky wherever you wanted it. And I loved it. I was so thankful that he let me give it a try there because if I had the money, it would be in my arsenal for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
He had the professional version, I think it was.
Right.
And oh
man, it was nice. And, had an extra battery, and the flight time I was reading like over 23 minutes.
No
man,
it's like wow.
Right.
I thought that was unheard of. I didn't do my research on it. Yeah. But.
Well, I'm gonna let the cat out of the bag right here, right now. I'm a little bummed, and I'll tell you why in a minute, but I have talked to Eric Monroe a little bit about the Phantom 3, and then I bumped into Chad here when I was editing. We talked about it, and he was talking about the Phantom 3. So I pulled the trigger. I went all out, bought the professional version, got everything, 3 extra batteries, bought a backpack with it, and bought the HDMI module so we can use our
Girl.
Now, here's the bad thing. Everything's good. It was shipped out. I got a thing in my email. It'll be here Monday. I'm like, yes, I'm all excited. So I was laying in bed last night going through the crash stories and everything, and my wife says, are you expecting a package? And I said, yeah, it should be one here Monday. She goes, huh, that's funny. UPS was here today.
Oh, no, and they missed
the signature. And I wasn't home, and I was just like,
no.
Are you kidding me? I could have this thing this weekend out playing around with my Phantom 3.
There's an app that I have that you put in. You can copy your tracking number in. It shows you almost
when they show up.
Yeah, when they're even en route. So you'll know immediately, so you don't have to keep going to their website.
Well, trust me, after that, I was on their website, signed up.
Oh, yeah.
Got my thing. Well, now it's already signed for. Yeah. All they have to do is drop it off.
Drop it on the door.
Yeah. Somebody's here.
Somebody's here. Oh, we have somebody knocking at the flight test door. This could be very interesting. Maybe we'll bring them on the podcast. What do you say? Hey, do we still have anybody actually following and listening on Periscope, Andre, yet?
We do.
Really?
We do.
Any questions or comments or anything have you seen?
People wanted to know about the HMB and stuff like that as well.
Uh-huh.
And multi-RC. Actually, Mark is sending me a frame to test.
Oh, fantastic. I'm so happy. I think you're going to love it. You know, I've been meaning to message him and I keep forgetting. I hear voices out there. I wanted to know if he got any good feedback or anything.
Do you guys know the address for
here? You know what? I do not.
I don't know if it's their package or not.
What's it say on the package?
Highland or something? I'll bring the package.
All right. Oh, UPS is showing up. Ask them if they have a Phantom 3.
Chris Roncaglione here.
Yeah. Oh, so I was so bummed last night laying in bed listening to
that. It says multi-GP. That might be theirs. That sounds like an art.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, that's Chris from multi-GP. All right, now, one thing real quick. I know we're supposed to be getting into the crash stories here, but it just... real quick, I just wanted to touch, Andre, only because I got one, and I know you just purchased one, but you got the FPV Vapor.
Yay!
Yes. Now, I know it's probably or already has been discontinued, but when I found the link, somebody actually, I think, sent it to me. They had them on sale for $60.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... What? How good for $60?
Right.
How can you pass that up?
Yeah.
So and I ordered one. I've been, especially with now that I got the goggles. I've been cranking around it's fun.
And you like your goggles?
Oh, Wayne.
Yeah.
Oh, Wayne, those things are just amazing.
I know.
I mean, you know, I've been flying the Nano QX and the FPV Vapor, and it just the goggles make a world of difference. Mm-hmm. They really do. But anyway, Andre, so I take it you got yours on sale too then, got it cheap?
Yes. I was into my local hobby shop to look for some screws for my quad because I was trying to change the motors, and it turned around and he's like, yeah, I brought in six, and I'm like, done. Well, because the camera alone is 130 Canadian.
Really?
Right? Oh, yeah.
Man.
Wow.
So I'm like, the camera, if I just take the camera and I put it on anything else, but what I liked about this one, and in my yard, I don't have a lot of footprint, but I was still in the wind the other day, and it was crazy windy, like the wings are flexing, and I'm able to do laps around the yard. I'm like, okay, this is perfect.
Yeah. You know,
like someone was teasing me on Facebook, on Instagram, that's not an airplane. I'm like, well, it flies, okay? I put my batteries in, so I've got my 1S is all ready to go. I haven't flown FPV yet because it's just been a little too windy and with the pool and everything, but I was trying to fly it between one of the games Laura had lying around on the lawn. I was trying to fly between the gates and stuff with it.
Oh, that's funny. It's just a lot of fun, especially, you know, you get a late evening with no wind or whatever, and you just cruise around. Yeah.
I should ask that UPS guy if he had your Phantom.
That's what we were saying.
That's what I just said.
Sorry. Yeah. But, Andre, I tried not to steer you wrong and give you, but I'm telling you, Andre, especially if you're going to be doing a lot more FPV and you get your quadcopters going and your Bixlers and everything, you've got to order set of those goggles.
Yeah.
I mean, spend the $250.
Yep.
Worst case.
Except it's like 950 Canadian.
Well, here's the thing. worst case, order it, ship it to my house, whatever. I'll pay for the shipping and ship it to you, FedEx through my wife's account since she works there. Whatever we got to do. We got to get you a set of those.
We'll figure something out.
All right. They are just phenomenal. Phenomenal.
No, I'm sorry. I'm
Go
catching
ahead.
Up.
Yeah.
You did not get the Phantom 3 then? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Oh, you have it now?
No,
it's still, UPS still has
can
it.
Can you pick it up at their facility
no, well,
or not?
I tried. He has it marked on here. Package is so delivered to the UPS access point.
You may get it today, right?
No, Monday. It says on the thing Monday.
Geez.
But that's what it originally said was Monday.
Right.
And I haven't looked at it since then, because usually they're spot on Monday.
No, that's why I said I got that app.
Uh-huh.
I will hammer that thing 10 times a day, especially on something like that.
Yeah.
And you can see constantly it's updated and you can see where it's at.
Yeah.
So you know when it's out for delivery.
Oh, it was just like, I wish my wife would have never even said anything. Wouldn't even,
the image quality was phenomenal with that.
Dumb?
And we even tried to deliberately block the signal. Like, he was flying on the other side of his house.
Really?
And we could not block.
Wow.
I mean, it was, I couldn't believe it. Because he's doing, he did like four circles around his house doing images and stuff. And I'm like, we can't even physically see. I mean, you block anything line of sight like that. You're toast.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe. Now, he did say it was a built-in 400-foot ceiling. But he says, I think you could bypass that feature on the Phantom 3 if you wanted to go higher elevations.
Yeah,
but
I think
I don't
you
know.
Can. I'm pretty sure.
I'm not 100% on that. I didn't research it.
Yeah.
But. But so what the do you B got? Set up in the default that way, obviously, is the smart thing to do.
Right, right. So what you got wrote down there, Mike?
I'm just marking things off. I forget things, and I gotta write it down so I can mention. I have tons of things I'd like to mention.
Do you want to go with that, or do you want to start with the meeting Scott and Pat and flying last night?
Well, I have that in here, too. So
you
want to
start that?
Yeah, okay. Let's do that.
So was it a couple Sundays ago, Mike?
Yes.
We went out flying Sunday morning. I think you were on vacation, Wayne.
Yep. At Jackson High School.
At Jackson High School. And we met two gentlemen there that we met at Flight Fest who lives near us, Scott and Pat, who they say they kind of troll the area on the weekends.
They were waiting for us
in the morning to bump into us. Uh-huh. And they never have. Well, it just happened to be that morning. Yeah. Mike and I were there, and they show up. Hey, look at the after hours guys.
They even had planes ready. Oh, yeah. I mean, you could tell they made many attempts in trying to get a flying episode or a flying scene with us. So,
They got all, I mean, they had tons of stuff to fly. We had a fantastic time with those two guys. Really down to earth.
Oh, yeah.
Great guys.
Yeah. Yes.
So we cruise around a little bit, but anyway, Scott had an EFX racer, and so I was excited because, you know, I've been wanting to try one, and I seen Andre and see all the stuff he goes through, and he says, you know, I'm having a little bit of trouble with this thing, like Andre was, where it just kind of torque rolls right off the takeoff, and he's had a few crashes with it. So we checked everything out, made sure everything was trimmed really well. And I said, so are we starting on a 3-cell? He goes, oh no, we went straight four right off the bat.
Yeah, 4-cell, torque roll.
So I was like, okay, make sure you tell Andre you manned up and went straight 4-cell. Skip over that 3-cell garbage. So I was a little nervous, but I said, well, first he says, I want you to,
yeah,
I was like, I don't think so. I said, I'll let you try it first. We have some problems. Maybe I'll try it. So, but I give it a good hard toss. I think he was probably, I don't know, just above half throttle. The thing took off beautiful, Andre.
It did.
Had no problems, no torque roll. I think, like you said, you got to find that perfect power setting for launch.
And between 3S and 4S, there is a difference.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, that thing sounded like a screaming banshee. Oh, my gosh. I couldn't believe how loud that thing was.
It was.
So, but we got it in the air, and we were having just a little bit of CG problems with it, and it was kind of out of trim. So I did take it over, and I flew it a little bit and brought it in for a landing. Now, the thing that blew me away, first of all, the thing flew fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Looked awesome.
I was really amazed of the slow flight capabilities of it.
I remember when it came in for landing. It was just
awesome. And that thing just glided. I did three go-arounds, Andre, with no motor because I couldn't get it to come down. It just kept going and going and going and going and going. But we adjusted the CG a little bit. He ran the 4-cell battery actually all the way in the nose, and plus he added a little bit of weight. So I take it you added quite a bit of weight too, right?
Yeah, I got a couple ounces glued into the nose.
Yeah,
made the world of difference to that aircraft.
Right, right.
And having a motor that wasn't smashed.
Yeah. So we did that, and we got her did a little bit of trimming with it, and he had no issues. He flew it around, had no problem with it. And this is a guy who's fairly new at flying, so I was really shocked that he bought.
Who owned the FX? Was it Scott?
That was Scott.
Scott.
That was Scott. Yeah.
So Mike, why didn't you try it?
Oh man,
we tried to. Mike's like, no don't
way.
Even.
Oh man,
no.
Are you kidding me? We were teasing when we gave that picture to you.
And this is a first. I'm on the Hobby King website right now looking at it.
Uh-huh.
It is out of stock, but it's in stock in the United States, both warehouses.
That's unusual.
That is definitely unusual.
Yeah. So I was impressed. It's a great flying, nice looking. It's small though. That's the only thing
eyes on.
Yeah, it's you can't blink with that airplane.
I was asked, you know, someone said, you know, is this like, you know, your next, and I'm like, this is, you know, I wouldn't call it expert, but this is definitely intermediate.
Yes, there's no doubt in my mind.
I've had orientation issues with it once or twice, and it's one of those things, okay, you know, back the throttle off, wiggle the wings, pull up, okay, now I know which way I'm going.
Yeah, yeah, that was my biggest problem too, was probably orientation, right when it got down around tree level, you know, and you couldn't tell where it was. You just gotta keep the sticks neutral and see what happens, you know.
Now I did. Go ahead,
Andre.
I was going to say, I flew mine last weekend after I got... So at Flight Fest, the EFX wing got warped due to the heat in the car. And I had one aileron that was just completely a mess.
Right.
So what was interesting, when I tossed it the first time, the trim was off, obviously.
Uh-huh.
And it rolled left on me the first time.
Usually
it would roll right.
Yeah.
Right? And the EFX, if it rolls right, you're gone.
Yeah.
Right? So the guys are watching, and this was a 4S test as well. So you really got to be up on the power and give it a good toss. And I like doing the underhand toss versus overhand.
Uh-huh.
But anyhow, it flew again, even with the wing, after I'd done all the heat work on it to try and straighten it all out. So I haven't even bothered purchasing another wing. I'm just going to fly it the way it is. So.
Good, good. I'm glad that got worked out.
Did you do an underhand or overhand?
Overhand.
Yeah.
Yep. I gave it, you know, that first one, I was nervous and I knew it would probably torque roll. So I chucked that thing pretty hard. But after that, we didn't have any issues with it at all.
It's interesting because it's an intimidating aircraft and then you get used to it.
Yeah. I was a little nervous for a while, you know, at first, but it, seeing how well it slowed down and then, you know, I was a little worried about maybe slowing it down too much and tip stalling, but really there was no issues. You know, the only thing he did have is, cause he torque rolled it in the ground. He put a different nose cone on it.
Yeah.
It had, I don't
that
know.
Turbo.
Yeah, man, that thing had some kind of like noise. Dynamic vibration noise.
Yes.
So he was going to order a regular nose cone for it. But
yeah, I think I've got one or two spares because they run out of stock quickly. And that was something I was. This is also a plane that I probably won't fly in the winter because if anything goes wrong, it gets messy quickly.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. No
we
doubt
saw
about
that.
It.
That day I did
fly a little faster, more challenging plane for myself. It wasn't the EFX Racer, however, it was my Hobby King Park Jet.
Oh my gosh!
And that thing is scrolling. And believe it or not, it rips. That thing does go.
I forgot.
I hit the throttle and it just go clear up in the sky, out of sight. And it's a little frame. It's only like a foot wide or whatever. And that motor, I'd hit the higher RPMs, and it'd start vibrating. I'm like, what is going on? I'm like, I'll ignore it, you know, real wise choice.
Yeah, that's right.
I kept flying it, and finally landed. I'm like, you know, after the battery died, I'm like, I'm going to keep flying it, even though it doesn't sound right, which is not the right thing to do. I'm totally being sarcastic, obviously. But I bring it in, and I notice the motor's, like, shifting probably an eighth of an inch, maybe roughly. And the wires were the only thing holding it from actually coming out of the out of the bell or whatever.
That's right.
And then I'm thinking, I was looking at set screws on another aspect. I'm like, man, they look tight. And of course, Chris pointed out, he's like, oh, you're missing a screw, a mounting screw to the shaft. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're right. I'm flying this thing missing a shaft screw on the motor.
So,
and only the wires were keeping it coming out.
So that motor was just going forward and back like over an 18.
That thing went
so I brought it in. I did do repairs to it, and I flew it at Chad shortly after. Now there is still some vibration. I may have to rebalance the prop or something.
Probably.
Something's going on because at high RPMs, it's still making some weird
noises.
But
you probably warped out your bearings.
Something's going on. I'm going to have to reevaluate. But that is a really challenging, squirrely plane for my abilities.
Yep.
I'm like, you know, when I want to challenge myself, I just and it's been so long since I flew it, I kind of just whipped it straight, not real hard.
Yeah.
That thing, I got to almost launch vertically in order, because it torque rolls a lot. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I completely forgot the aspects of that plane.
But, yeah, because I wrecked your first one.
Yeah.
Mike says, here, fly this. Okay. Right into the ground.
I still have the wreckage on my refrigerator. I'm slowly pulling parts from it to repair and do other things to other planes. So I wanted to add that because that is a little speed demon for
that
me
is,
anyhow. So.
Yeah.
All right.
Them guys had tons of different planes.
Oh, they
had
that one from, I wanted to mention too, from Harbor Freight.
Oh,
the
frame.
That was a beautiful looking plane for the frame. They said they got the frame and then they just gutted it and did their own thing with it.
I believe that was Pat, and I think, I could be wrong, but I think he said his wife got it for him, you know, picked it up at Harbor Freight, and the, you know, stock, you know, the box from Harbor Freight, the thing was a hunk of junk. So he gutted it, put some good electronics and a brushless motor, and it was a P-51, I think. And I think flew great.
Really?
It almost,
great.
Yeah, looked
it really
great.
Did.
Almost
the
flew
frame
as good
was
as like
really nice.
The
looking
P P-51 brushless from Horizon. I was really shocked at how well that thing flew. So then we flew a few other things and helped the guys out.
My H-Quad, my 250 size quad, and then my Micro Radian a little bit at the end. But there's better stories that I know you're going to go to there.
So. So then Pat pulls out a brand new, beautiful Park Zone FW-190. He says, hey, this is going to be the maiden. I was like, oh, sweet. Thing looks great. Now, as you know, Wayne, too, Warbird had landing gear, the grass and everything. You're going to have to take off from the parking lot. And that parking lot there, you have a huge, giant building, a one in, on the side of it's a road, and it's full of curbs. So you're kind of limited in it. You know, for a maiden, it's definitely not the best place unless you got something that flies really slow. So I was like,
and in the meantime, people parked their vehicle on the road and were doing some football drills.
Yeah,
close to the parking area.
We had some cars in the parking lot, and then at the one end where the grass is, there was a vehicle and some people there.
Trucks there.
So I was like, are you really sure you want to do this? No problem.
And you helped them taxi.
So yeah, we checked it. We checked the plane out. Everything looked good. He did a good taxi test. Everything looked great. I was like, I was still nervous, though. You know, us. Yeah. We're like, So he was at it. He's like, yeah, I'm dying to fly it. You know, I've been waiting. Okay.
He wanted us to be part of it, obviously.
So we did a little wind check, and he was going to have to take off kind of heading towards the school, you know. And I said, well, that plane's got plenty of power. I know you shouldn't have a problem. So he started out. Everything looked good. Added the power thing. Comes up off the ground, looks beautiful. I was like, oh man, this is great. Next thing you know, he's probably 20 feet off the ground.
Erratic
this thing
movements.
Just instantly like banked left, comes around here back and forth. I was
it
like,
dips close, it hits asphalt.
He was at accelerated full power, speed. Comes down, the wing just scrapes the asphalt all the way in this bank turn. How it didn't even stall.
That's when my heart started stopping right there. I couldn't believe
he saved it. I mean, this thing hits, it's banking. I was like, oh my gosh. Brings it back around and it leveled off. Yeah, but it looked good. Me and Mike looked at each other like, oh, he's got it. Everything's good. You know, it's probably just nerves or whatever. Mm-hmm. Next thing we know, that plane was heading right for that car.
Oh, no.
The people were watching this time.
Like, they freezed on their grills and are
looking, and I'm like, not the car, not the car, not the car. Pulls it up over the car, straight up vertical. I think it kind of went into a stall, started spiraling, comes back down. He kind of leveled off a little bit, and then next thing we know, bam. It just boom! And it,
full acceleration.
It went right down in between those people.
Oh.
And I mean, I know. And the foam just exploded.
Oh. And I kind of shied away the scene. I didn't know how to handle that. I'm like,
I felt horrible.
Oh, yeah,
for Pat.
Of course we do.
And of course, great guys, Pat and Scott walk over. They were apologizing immensely, you know.
We
so sorry. Yeah,
I was
like, I'm not sure I even want to go over there.
That's how I felt, anyhow.
And they weren't very happy.
I'm sure they
didn't say anything, but they weren't too happy.
See, that's
about
the kind of stuff that can get you kicked out.
Yeah,
you know.
So, but I did feel really bad for Pat. They went over and picked up the pieces and came back, and he says,
"You evaluated this."
Yeah,
perfectly.
And he goes, "I think all my controls were backwards," and I was like, I don't think, because you did a taxi test.
So you knew the rudder was right.
So the rudder was good. And I said, and you took off fine.
Yeah,
you know,
so
that thing, if the elevator was back, that thing should have shot right back into the ground. So I said, let's plug everything in and let's see. So
guessed it before we verified.
Yeah, I thought the ailerons were reversed.
He had it spot on.
So we plugged everything in and sure as not.
And it made
the ailerons
sense.
Were reversed. Everything else was normal, but the ailerons were reversed.
And
again,
do a crap check.
Yeah, well,
we thought he did that.
Yeah.
You know, that we did our
right.
Our
and he swears, not saying he's lying, but he swears that he checked that and everything was good. And I said, now what I have done is on the table.
Looked at it from the wrong angle.
And I'm like, we're good there. I have done that. So, you know. But I felt bad.
Oh, it was horrible.
It is fixable, though. It was bad, but everything, all the brakes were pretty clean.
Right.
He needs a new, motor mount, I think. But everything
that
else.
That kind of ended their day.
I
hate that.
Yeah. I did feel bad. But they were pretty upbeat about
their
it.
Their personalities
you know?
Were very similar to our group here.
Good guys. So I hope to get out there,
back there.
Yeah, and fly again with Scott and Pap. So that was our crash story.
Ouch.
And you took the images and posted some of them.
Yeah, posting them on Instagram.
I don't know if they're, well, they may be listeners. I don't know. If
yeah, they are. Okay. They are, yep.
So they'll hear this eventually.
Oh, yeah, I told them we were going to talk about it. They're like, oh, yeah, that's fine, that's fine.
And then I also flew my well-anticipated Twisted Hobbies 3D.
Oh, that's right.
Laser crack.
Yeah, talk about that.
Oh, my gosh. I did not go wrong on that purchase. Thanks so much. It flew phenomenal. And you point that thing, it's going where I mean, the direction and the ability of that plane was phenomenal.
Are you listening, Andre?
I know. I'm just,
oh my
I got
gosh.
A ratchet.
I attempted hovers. I did attempted knife edges. Knife I didn't edge. Do them smoothly, but I'm trying to learn these things.
Right.
I was doing maneuvers I never would have even attempted with any other type of airframe and having a blast doing it.
Yeah.
And what was I going to say? The hover, just
everything.
Everything was, and what is it called? A reverse loop or outside loop?
Yeah, outside loop.
That's the first time I ever did one of those, and it did that piece of cake, you know?
You were actually kind of doing some waterfalls with it.
It was, I loved it. And I actually flew it at my dad's after that again. And now he's in a little tighter area. There's trees all around. I almost lost it over his thicket. And I was pressed for time.
Yeah.
Like the last thing I need to be is digging this out of a tree when I got to get somewhere. So I brought it back in. But I was doing inverted flight. And I got a little misoriented a little further out. But I brought it back in. But I love it. It is so much. I burnt two batteries real quick. Where I had 12 minutes. That was it. And I'm like, I'm flying it.
Yeah, that'll definitely probably be my next purchase because now with my new house, this is going to be absolutely perfect.
I love it.
And even if you got a smaller space, like if you're at your dad's, you can practice your hovers and your harriers.
Honestly, if I would have been pressed for time, I probably would have stepped more in the middle of his yard. I was right off his porch right off the sidewalk.
Yeah.
My dad's like, that's cool. I never saw one take off on a patio before.
I was impressed with it. I flew it a little bit. It's actually more responsive than
mine.
You said
it's lighter.
Definitely lighter. You could feel the difference.
Yeah,
you
had me do that.
And
now with the lightness, I did notice just little gusts of winds. It does pop like a bobber.
So
you may want to, if you're learning new maneuvers, pick a nice calm
day absolutely.
To do that.
It's got
to
be calm.
That's what kind of threw me off over his thicket because it was doing a lot of bobbing with the lightness of it. So. That's the only downside, but
that's
not really a downside.
No, I mean, it's really not because it helps your reflexes.
It left me counter the winds, that's for sure, and the variables out there. So, but I did notice that it does like almost like a high alpha, which is close to like learning hover even when you're doing that like high alpha maneuver type thing. Then you can gust it. I loved it.
Good.
Had a blast.
I'm happy.
I'm not disappointed with that at all.
Good.
So that was my little take on the Twisted Hobbies 3D plane.
Good.
Most excellent.
What else you have on that list? A lot of writing over there.
Well, I repaired my baby blender, and that flew great. I can't remember. I think I flew that at Chad's.
Yeah, you didn't have it that day we were there.
I repaired my Spitfire from last year's Flight Fest. I took a picture of that. I thought it would fly like new.
Yeah.
Well, thank God, because Chad showed up or something, and I'm like, would you mind hand launching me? Thank God I had him hand launch me. Oh my gosh, that thing banked to the right so hard. If I would have been at the sticks to counter, I mean, and as I was in the air, I'm like halfway left on the aileron stick. I'm like, Chad, I need some heavy trim on the aileron. So he's like tweaking the buttons for me. I'm like, I don't know if I could have landed it with, you know, trying to trim it in the air and stuff because it was so hard, right? And for some reason, the ailerons are like, that's default now. I don't know why my wing is shifted or something's goofed up on my repair, I think. But it flies nice, but the ailerons are exaggerating.
Oh,
you know, they're not perfect
not good.
In the wing, so I don't know. I don't know how to correct that necessarily, but it flies great. I left Chad fly it, and he's like, you know what, Mike? It's been a long time since I flew a plane. He's so into the multi-rotors, and you could tell he had a true enjoyment of actually just flying a plane. So I was so glad that
That's what's great about this hobby. It's so diverse.
Yep.
There's so many things. You're like, I'll fly this little bit. Let's go over.
But that's also the curse.
Yeah,
that there's so many things.
Andre, he's starting to attest to that.
Well,
now, you know,
it's like this week. I think I posted that one photo where I'm having RC squirrel moments where I won't focus in on one project. You know,
I know.
I got the Sky Mule back together.
I see.
Projects. So that was my first time using what is it?
Foam tack.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yep. Good stuff.
She's back in one piece, a little squish, not squishy, a little, you know, shifted a little tiny bit on one side, but otherwise the fuselage feels strong again. So I just need to go through all my control surfaces and put the props back on. And then work up the courage to see if it'll fly.
That's the worst part. You get all back together, like fingers crossed.
Will it go?
Yeah. The repairs look pretty respectable on that SkyMew.
I thought it looked pretty good actually.
I commented on a little bit of. Like when
the
I was
decals
to...
looked a little rough, but that, other
listen
than that,
to Mike. Oh,
Mike would pick that.
Well, he even mentioned that he might take the decals off. So I pointed that out.
Yeah, what was it? Someone came back and just said, "Grab some red and black marker, and you won't notice it once it's in the air."
That's what he remarked. I remember. Yes.
Oh, that's funny.
But I thought it was respectable. I didn't see like the big duct tape or the tape like the racer or not the racer.
It surprised me. The foam tack took a little bit longer than I expected to set up. But once I started following their patterns, I was trying on the side of the fuse where it really got broken up to hold everything straight.
Uh-huh.
But
you took your time and it paid off. It looked like a lot.
So one piece at a time because there's points where I was like, "Hey, can you do this?" And I'm like, "No, I'm holding the plane." I'll quit you in like 5 minutes. Yes. I gotta set up the repair.
Let it set up.
Yeah, and just did it one little bit of time. So, yeah.
Good.
I also got to swim in Chad's new pool in between.
Oh,
flying.
Listen to
that
you.
Was phenomenal. Oh, my gosh. He's got a really nice setup there. Got to enjoy that. And then, what was the other? Oh, wait. Two Saturdays. Oh, I have been flying the Proto X at work a lot because a guy brought in a new heli. And it was one, I think he bought it at Maz Yaboo or something like. Are you familiar?
No.
It was an off brand. Mm-hmm. And it was really weird because I'm flying this thing and I'm thinking something's not computing right. Well, I finally figured it out because it was very stable. It was, mind you, it was the double rotor fixed pitch. Nothing too.
Yeah.
And it looked nice. It had lights flashing, different things. And I finally figured it out. His left stick and his right stick, the yaw and the pitch roll left right were switched on the sticks.
Oh, so it was probably mode
the yaw, one. The yaw was on the right. And I'm not used to that. I was like, so I was really fighting my mind trying to fly this thing, thinking, okay, my yaw's usually on my throttle stick. And it didn't seem like normal convention with heli, but I don't, and you mentioned maybe another mode.
It should have another mode. Yeah. You should be able to adjust it mode one or mode two.
Oh, really? I could probably switch that on his transmitter somehow. Yep. I might mention that to him because I think I could fly it really well if it was in something that my brain could. I'm setting my tendencies for him being a new pilot.
Yep.
I said, you'll probably learn it and be fine, but I can't.
But if he learns
I think I'd rather learn the convention that's out there, the standard.
Someone on Periscope said mode three, guys.
Oh, maybe. All right. But some of those toy helicopters, will come with all four modes.
I just was able to determine the yaw and the pitch roll, or the roll left and roll right or reverse.
And this would be a good time to fix that, because if he does learn it,
I may look,
and then it'll be hard if he decides to get into airplanes. Yeah.
Imagine him buying some of Bind and Fly and he goes out there and flies that thing would auger right in.
Well, see, I thought I was going to rip it because I'm doing real well with the Proto X. Okay, I'm just glad to hover and bring this back down in one piece at this point. Because something's not right here.
Oh my gosh.
But anyways, that was a little experience I had with a different type of a flying experience there. And then also, I wanted to bring this up. See, the Sky Surfer, did I fly that day? I know I flew it with you. And I had the porpoise.
Oh, yeah, we had the problem. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like,
the
what is going on? Well, that's what Chad had mentioned that to me, too, the CG. But I have so much weight in the nose of this thing. I'm like, this is not adding up. And I solved the problem. I have that. So I go back and I'm looking online and I found the CG points for the Sky Surfer. And I'm like, this thing's actually nose heavy. I had so much weight. You really?
I do. Okay. Go ahead.
No, I want to hear you.
I think your position of your motor.
No.
No? That wasn't it?
Well, it could be a little of that. But when I'm looking at this plane, when I'm holding up the CG points, I'm looking at it. and I'm looking at the fuselage. The horizontal stabilizer yeah. is angled down.
Oh.
The fuselage actually warped.
Oh.
And I think it's always yeah. doing the porpoising. Yeah. So Chad's offered yeah. to help me. I'm like, how am I going to straighten this fuselage? Because you can bend it, but it's not holding that position. And, yeah. and like I said, the vertical stabilizer angling, that's got to be my porpoising
yeah.
effect.
Yeah.
Because this thing flew great, and I did replace the fuselage. I think it's been like that from day one out of
wow.
the box.
Because, that's possible. Yeah.
Because it always had porpoising. Yeah. Like, and yep. I kept putting more weight in the nose, yep. more weight yeah. in the nose. And I'm like,
yep.
And then I looked at their pictures. I'm like, their horizontal stabilizer is not like
no, this. No. It, should, not a it should always plane,
be level with yeah. the wing.
Always.
And yep. it was not nope. at all. And so now we're going to figure out a scheme to maybe warp it the other way, yeah. put weights yep. or yep. maybe heat it, put a yep. rod. Mm. Or, yeah. He's going to have some ingenious way of straightening that fuselage. Because that's what it needs. Because it is a great flying plane. I knew mm-hmm. when it was new with the original fuselage, I'm like, man, this thing would soar forever. I didn't have the porpoising, something.
Right.
I could not figure. Finally, it all came together when I was looking down the wing line.
That's
I'm like,
funny.
Oh, geez, that's got to be it. Huh. So that's pretty much all the notes I have on things. Oh, and I've been working diligently on my Bloody Wonder.
Oh,
in fact, the paint scheme I'm doing on it is so nice that I'm debating whether I even want it to be combat worthy. This way.
Here we go.
So I'm like, I'm going to have to put it through its paces and wreck it a few times before I can have it next year's combat. Because I put way too much time in on it at this point with the paint scheme and stuff. But I'm going to save my settings on it with the original one because I think you put a lot of expo. It was real squirrely
yeah,
on
yeah.
that one.
Yep,
so
yep.
I'm going to keep all that the same. I totally did away with the old one. I couldn't repair it. I tried, and I'm like, you know what? I'm starting from scratch on it. So
that's probably the best thing.
I'll take a picture once that's done and post on Instagram because of the paint scheme.
I hear the phone ringing. Maybe it's my Phantom. Somebody answer.
Yeah.
So those were my notes if you want to get into crash stories.
Yeah, this is supposed to be a crash story podcast. But
we've been into this podcast for how long now?
Over an hour. Yeah. We haven't even talked. That's yeah. fine.
Well, when you get out and fly, it makes for a lot of content. And yeah. I actually was able to fly. And bow season's around the corner,
oh,
so
no.
I'm probably going to not make many more podcasts. So.
All right, well, we'll see how my voice holds up. And I have to apologize, too, because it's prime time allergy season for me, so I'm jacked up on Flonase and allergy medicine. I woke up, I couldn't even barely even talk this morning. So
I got some stuff for you to try.
Okay, I'll try it. I'll try anything. So if I sound a little funny in my voice. But here we go. Let's get into some crash stories. Like I said, some of these I kind of went through, picked out some of the better ones. Some of them are long. I'll try to get through them. Let's see. The first one is, this is by Darren Holmes. He goes by EDF Jockey. Says, I've been flying for almost 30 years now and I've started to try electrics. Bought a couple of nice planes from the local stores and been flying them for about 5 years now. With only minor damage to the nose of my EDF F-18 Hornet. The other is a T-33 Shooting Star and I have great time with them. Then I saw Josh Bixler on YouTube and found his phone board, Free Plans, laugh out loud. Looked them all over and decided to try an F-22 modified for a, excuse me, for a 70mm EDF. That sounds interesting. It looked amazing when it was done and it flew like a dream right from the first hand launch. Then the nieces and nephews came over and saw it next to this store-bought Hornet that is painted in Tiger Squad garb, and they said, does that thing even fly? So I'm buzzing around the sky and said, this plane flies smoother and easier than any of the store-bought planes. See, that's when I took my fingers off the stick to show them how nice it flies and tracks through the sky. What they saw was how nice it flies straight and smooth into a guy wire for my ham radio antenna and then drops 35 feet into a heap. So I repeat, fly the plane. The last one happened last week at the flying field. I had just gotten to the field and opened up the tonneau cover. Wait till you hear this story. I had just gotten to the field and opened up the tonneau cover on the box of my Ranger. Under that, I made a bracket to hold four of my planes. My prize plane is a Tiger Squad F-18 Hornet. It's never been in any crash or even has a scratch on it during transport. So, Mike, you can appreciate that. Don't get ahead of me now. I pulled out the Alua style Adams whiteboard foam plane, plastic covered foam board for winter flying, and got up to the line with my 72 megahertz system, and I'm the only guy still using it. Anyway, I flew around for a while and had a great time launching and landing and relaunching and landing again. People to feel were loving, and I was letting them try it out. I sat down and take a couple of kids and their parents talk about the foam board planes and how cheap it was to get set up and get going. I hear John call out dead stick on his 60 gas Bearcat. I told the parents and the kids not to move as they were under the lean-to. So I stepped out to see where it was, and he was looking over at me and says that the wind's got it heading toward the road. He banked it over and tried to bring it back. It stalls, and he says, he stalls the monster, and it spins down into the back of my pickup truck.
Oh, no.
No cars for 20 feet on either side of my truck.
No.
Then the wing hits the tailgate and the tonneau cover, and the nose of his plane hits the nose of the Hornet right in front of the canopy, shearing the nose off. Was not even flying the plane. The Bearcat needs all new balsa leading edge and recovering, and I found the wingtip tank at the local hobby store for the new nose. But how do I explain to people I've never crashed the plane now? Lots of laugh. John was so sorry he was going to buy me a new plane, but I stopped him and showed him my FT-style Corsair with the wings extended 2 inch wider than the plans in your forum section that the other guys came up. And just because it flies more gently than the original wings, I told him that if he crashes it into this one, it's going to cost him $4.83.
Yeah.
Keep it in the air, Darren.
Oh, man. You know, okay, you know how we always make that joke about crashes.
Uh-huh.
One more time.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, also, this is the one that goes right side by side with it, is when it flies great and somebody's there to watch you now.
Yes.
Anytime you have an audience,
I know.
You can bet something.
I fold like a cheap lawn chair when people watch, and so I can attest to that.
Yeah, it's crazy. You get some people around. Oh. Or I
well, now, that's how those band members were showing up at Jackson. And I started getting like, I'm like, okay, I'll throw out the UMX Radiant at this point, because if I wreck this, I can deal with it. Right. They're probably looking like, oh, look at that sap out there with that little paper plane flying. Oh my God. And by the time spectators, I got to tame my flying down quite a bit.
Okay. This isn't a spectacular crash story, but he sent me photos on where the plane went down. And wait till you hear what these two kids did to try to get their plane back, which is kind of funny. This one's by Jalen. Hello, Chris. I'm from Portland, Oregon. The After Hours Podcast. Give me something enjoyable to listen to while I'm doing my homework. I just got back from retrieving my FT nutball and thought I'd share the story with you. Yesterday was a shortened day at school, so me and my friend decided to do some steamer combat. Neither of us had really done much steam. That's just steamer.
What's steamer combat? I've never heard of that.
Streamer
okay,
combat.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Perhaps I also just mentioned my friend had lost his Super Cub LP a few months back over a rock quarry near a field that we fly at. Last week, him and I went out to fly the nutball. I was a bit worried about his skills since he's still a beginner and pretty much hasn't flown anything since January. I chucked the nutball and he was going great. Knowing that he could fly was a relief. Now, fast forward to yesterday. I spent a couple hours building another nutball so we could do our combat. I got done in the evening after dinner. He came over and we started our streamer combat. The wind was picking up and I felt confident. We decided to keep flying, but not for long. Suddenly, my friend lost orientation and he crashed. The nutball made a very nice crunching sound when it hit. We knocked on a few doors and eventually found it stuck inside a huge thorny blackberry bush. And he showed, I have some pictures of this thing is ginormous.
Oh man.
And they couldn't even get to it. By now it had gotten dark, so we talked to the people there and asked if we could come back tomorrow with some hedge cutters. He said, sure, come on back. So we went over there to their backyard, hauling with us around 200 feet of extension cord, electric hedge trimmers, branch cutters, thick winter gloves, and a jacket. By the way, it's not particularly fun wearing a jacket with thick, clumsy gloves in 70-degree weather while also swinging around electric hedge cutters.
Like one of my skis.
We also ran into a fellow classmate on the way there carrying all this stuff, and it was a bit off. Man.
Explain that one.
What are you guys doing? You're not going to kill anybody, are you? Are you making a movie? What's going on? When we got there, we realized that we didn't have enough extension cord.
200 feet. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
The thorny blackberry bush was really hard to cut. We took multiple shifts with the electric hedge trimmers, and it ended up taking us over 2 hours to hack a path to the plane. I also...
This is a nutball, too.
That's what I'm thinking. All this for a nutball. Yeah. Go buy another piece of dollar. Oh, my gosh. I also managed to cut the extension cord in the process.
Oh, jeez.
Electrocute.
That's what he said. Luckily, it didn't short out. Surprisingly, the nutball was almost intact and in almost in perfect condition. Even the prop was intact. Only my battery was damaged. It was slightly puffed. We packed up our stuff, thanked the people, and left.
Now, 2 hours of that bush.
Now that I think about it, the streamer, which I actually used a toilet paper roll that I cut in half because I was too lazy and cheap to go buy a real streamer.
I wish they would have had a quad film in this because you guys see the bush just shaking violently while they're trimming it.
The plane was mostly white. I might have contributed this to his orientation problems. Remember how I said it was kind of windy that day? He was flying downwind. Not a good idea. Streamer combat was also way harder than we thought. You have to watch both planes at the same time. Hopefully you got some entertainment out of this. Attach are the photos from our little expectation.
We got lot of entertainment out of that.
That's the bush, Mike, if you want.
All right.
I mean, it is just crazy thick. Gosh. It's ridiculous.
Oh, man.
She'll wait real quick for
that
you.
That is so funny.
Yeah, I mean, the things you do to get a plane out of a tree, right, Mike?
That was pretty funny.
Oh, my gosh.
Whoa. That was a great story. I'm glad you shared that one.
Yeah. So thanks, Jim.
Where were they out of, did they say?
Portland, Oregon, I think you said. Yeah. That's crazy, isn't it?
Man, they buried it.
Yeah. Maybe I'll have to post those pictures on the website.
Oh, that's
rather
that
entertaining.
That's one of the better crash stories.
I'll save that one. Let's see. The next one. I like this name. His name is James Stewart, Wayne.
Yeah.
Jimmy Stewart? That sounds
no, funny. James Stewart's following us in flight test accuracy. Sweet.
I know his brother raced cars for a while, but I didn't know James flew airplanes. Okay. He's got a couple here, and these are pretty good. A few years ago, I had this Morris Hobby style .40 size profile airframe. Nothing special. It was a fun little sport glow plane. After flying a while and a few unimportant crashes, I noticed that one of the aileron servos wasn't centering right, so I replaced it. Simple, right? The wires were all zip-tied together, so when I cut the tie, I accidentally nicked the wire to the elevator servo without noticing.
Oh.
So, the next flight I take off, and as I get altitude, the elevator stops working, naturally. Mm-hmm. Luckily, I was pulling up when this happened, so I brought the plane into a fairly gentle landing by throttle management. Now, I replace the elevator servo. Same deal as the aileron, simple fix, except for one little detail. I didn't center it. So, I go to the field, turn on the plane, and notice that the elevator is down at the servo center. I didn't know any better, so I didn't do anything to fix it. Take off, and immediately, I'm barely in control. The plane is porpoising all over the place. I manage to do a lap around, try to set up for landing, but I don't have enough up throw to get it to pull out on final. I have the right stick all the way back, and that poor little OS-40 screaming all the way. It's got enough airspeed just to pull up, but not enough. She goes in at what must have been 100 miles an hour, or close to it. I missed the runway and landed in the grass. Even still, the engine and servos were all that survived. Then he has a 100cc, that's a big airplane, 100cc Edge. More recently, I had an older SIG 100cc Edge 540. This plane was my pride and joy, the biggest plane I've ever owned. I was flying at the local club, which had a good runway and some grass, in a tree line with a small group of oaks just out from the tree line. Although one can't see that from the flight boxes, I was making low passes with the Edge, and since this plane is so much bigger than anything else I've ever owned, I was flying a bit farther away from me than normal. Not over the runway, but over the grass at about, after about the fifth pass or so, I started getting comfortable and relaxed my attention a bit. On the next pass, the left wing got caught in the oaks. which just tore it apart. Nothing I could do to save it, just watched in slow motion as my plane rolled left, since the left wing wasn't lifting anymore, and impacted. Ouch. That's a big airplane.
Oh, man.
Then he had a radio failure. This one is not a crash, but three. It started with a multiplex fun jet at a fun fly, just cruising along really, really fast. No problems, and suddenly a violent roll into the ground. No control, nothing. I think, what happened? I flew the other planes afterwards as well and had no problems. Then, a few days later, I was doing a remaiden on a 1962 vintage Tauri, I don't know how you say it, T-A-U-R-I, Tauri, three-channel trainer. First two flights, the engine quits. By the third, it's tuned in, but as I'm flying, it suddenly goes full throttle and full down elevator.
Oh.
Ouch. What could go wrong? I do some thinking. I was able to fly the other aircraft just fine except for these two. What makes these two different? These two aircraft were using the Lemon RX receivers. All of my other ones were genuine Spectrum. That must be the problem. Some side-by-side range testing supports this as well. Now I can fly my other plane safely, right? So I go to the field with my favorite plane, thinking it was the Lemon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was flying a Value Hobby Saber. Hey, Value Hobby, one of our favorite places. A Value Hobby Saber profile with a Magnum 91 four-stroke engine and a genuine Spectrum RX. I take off about three-quarter throttle and watch the plane uncontrollably loop back into the asphalt, destroying the plane.
Is it the transmitter battery?
After sending the DX8, back to Horizon, I learned that the cause of the problems was a loose antenna in the transmitter.
I thought it would be transmitter related. I didn't know if it was battery or what.
Let's see. Next one here. Scroll through.
So loose antenna caused all that mayhem.
Oh, and it was a hit and miss thing. This one's from Mike, and he is all the way from Perth in Western Australia.
Whoa.
And Mike, I know exactly where Perth is because probably 8-10 years ago, they had a motocross to nations in Perth, Australia. So I know where that's at.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Firstly, late last year or early this year, I cannot remember exactly, there was a news story in which a civil aviation safety authority were considering an exemption for normal commercial UAV operation rules. If your unmanned vehicle weighed less than 2 kilograms and was not subject to any regulation or regulations governed by the RC hobbyists. Also in Australia, if your vehicle weighs less than 150 grams, or it might be 100 grams, I can't remember, it is legally classified as a toy and not subject to any regulations at all. The first crash involves the Cargo Twin. Way back when Peter first put his video up, I knew I had to build one as soon as Larry Ross put the plans up and I was downloading them and getting stuck into the build. I hate rubber banded wings, so I spent some time figuring out a bolt modification. Finally, the day came for the maiden. I put so much work into this and it turned out so nice, I was really nervous. At any rate, I opened the throttle and my twin zoomed across the grass and rose gracefully up in the air. So far, so good. At about 50 feet, I pushed the aileron stick over the start and started a gentle turn to the right. Nothing. Nothing happened, so I pushed the stick all the way to the right. The aircraft started to turn to the left. I then started frantically waggling the sticks in any direction. No matter what I did, the plane continued to spiral up and to the left. At the height of about 80 feet, the motors cut, and the plane continued to turn, but was now descending. As it was a little nose-heavy, the descent got steeper and steeper. By the time it hit the ground, it was almost vertical. Heart sick, I walked over and was surprised to find very little damage. The nose was caved in, and the wings were cracked at the root. If I had used the rubber bands, the wings wouldn't have been undamaged. The cause was a loose connection on my receiver aerial, and I put this in there because I've had this happen to me several times.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
What is it exactly?
The little antennas that come off your receiver.
Oh, I had that on the oranges.
Exactly. Sometimes you got to put a little bit of glue on them because if they get bumped around or moved, it's an intermittent thing. Yep. It may work five times perfect, and then one time it don't.
And it only takes one time.
Exactly. So the cause was a loose connection on my receiver aerial. It had been a 3D foamy that had crashed from a low height, and I assumed the receiver was fine. The connection was intermittent, so when range testing, it also seemed fine.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. At any rate, I repaired the Cargo Twin and flew the daylights out of it. I had so much fun dropping parachute dudes and simply doing aerials with it. Finally, the Depron started to crumble with age and so on. I'm now building a mini cargo twin. Sorry, Pierre. To me, it was always called a cargo twin. Okay, the second crash involves a fairly cheap and nasty powered glider called a Skyhawk. As a glider, these things were useless, but in general purpose, they were great. Many of the guys in my club had one. After a while, people started putting bigger and bigger motors on the front, and the Skyhawks got faster and faster, which I did decide to do the same thing. My setup was fast, but not as fast as a lot of them. At any rate, our flying field is huge, but at one end, there are three rows of trees. Round and round, I flew, zooming along, having an absolute ball. On my last pass, naturally, as I cranked my Skyhawk into the turn, I thought to myself, that was a bit close to the trees, and should I turn sooner the next time around? The next second, there was the loudest thump I'd ever heard in my life. I realized I hit a tree and ran over to excessive damage. I could not find my plane on the ground or in the row of trees. I had seen it fall to the ground, so I knew it wasn't stuck in a tree. I was really puzzled. As I turned around to walk back to the pits, I saw it. I had hit a tree in the second row of trees. I had been zooming around in between the rows of trees and didn't even realize it. Could you imagine that? Afterwards at home, I had a close look at the damage. The motor had been ripped out of its casing. The wings were smashed in many places, and the plastic fuselage was completely crumpled. Even some of the control horns were broken out. Every servo had its gear stripped. A model airplane crash like this is an intense demonstration of the laws of fit. And he actually has some YouTube videos on here for you. So I thought that was cool that the guy was flying in between the trees and didn't realize it.
Didn't even realize it, yep.
Yeah. So that was Mike. Let's see. I have one here.
I'm kind of trying to visualize that. I don't know if I understand what was going on flying in between the trees.
Well, there was two. Yeah, that's kind of weird. It's two sets of trees, and it could be a thing where if he was flying low, maybe under the branches or something. Maybe he was just zooming in between them so quick, and he didn't realize he was in between the two. I don't know, but I could see that happening. This one is by Nelson Kays, and I think he's wrote in before. Hey, it's Nelson again. You might remember my tree topper story. Mike, you were just talking about that.
Yeah, is this the one that looked like a star?
I believe so. Besides learning to fly this year, I've been working on my senior design project. I think this one's pretty good, too. Senior design mechanical engineering project at Cal State University. Along with eight other student engineers, we designed a plane to enter in the SAE Aero Design West as a student completion. If I get more time this summer, I'd like to write an article about our design and build process. But our plane was designed to lift 15 pounds static cargo and a 3-pound droppable package while being limited by power and empty weight. We were limited to a 0.46 engine. We attempted to compensate with a larger plane to get the lift we required. The plane we came up with was 10 feet long, 15 foot wingspan, and weighed 9.5 pounds. That's pretty
wow.
That's a big plane.
Yeah.
The plane flew well in competition besides being underpowered in the wind that had picked up that afternoon, but that's a longer story that I hope to write about in the article section. Anyway, we now have a plane that is capable of carrying a significant amount of weight, so we're teaming up with some computer science students to convert our plane from carrying steel plates from our first competition to carrying an autonomous system for a search and rescue application for another competition. The first step in converting, we decided that we were done messing with the nitro engines and threw on a Power 90 E-Flight motor, one of our other teams had no longer need of. So our awesome-looking plane has only flown once. In our short flight in competition, yes, we were behind and did not get to maiden it until the competition. Fully loaded with 18 pounds of total payload, anxious to get out to the field and see how it would fly, while not underpowered and not overloaded, we swapped out the motor the day of the competition. We decided to taxi it outside in the quad that night to make sure everything was in order early the next morning. This is where it gets good. With a 15-foot wingspan, we figured it would be easier to roll around if we left the outer two of the 3-foot or of the 3 5-foot wing panels off the plane. They're just going to taxi, so, why put them on, right? The outer panels included the plane's ailerons, but that shouldn't be a problem because we were never going to leave the ground, right? So we were rolling around, taxiing up and down the quad when the unthinkable happened. our DX9 lost signal from like 20 feet away.
Whoa.
And our orange RX 6-channel receiver failsafe to full throttle. The beastly powered 90 lifts off like a rocket.
With no ailerons.
Yeah, with no ailerons. Shoots up in the air. I watched in disbelief as it rocketed straight towards the library. Thankfully, it banked up before hitting the library, went up to 60, 70 feet, rolled over and shot through a tree and got lodged in it. We never found out if the receiver reconnected or not, but if it didn't, I think it would have made a difference as we didn't have any ailerons anyway attached to our panels. First reaction was glad it didn't hit anybody, sure. But as late, it was late and no one was really around to get hit. Second, I was glad it didn't slam through the glass windows of the library.
No doubt.
I could just imagine a LiPo fire from our 6-cell 3800 battery on the third floor of the locked up library.
Yeah, that had bad potential.
Oh, man. Books burn good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, here's a situation where you think, what could go wrong? We don't even have the wing panels on. You know, we're just going to taxi around, and this thing takes off like a rocket.
Oh, my gosh. My heart's racing thinking of this scenario.
We knocked our plane out of the tree with a pole and took it back to the lab to assess the damage. I actually thought from the trip through the tree that the damage would have been worse. It was slight damage to the single wing panel. We had on the plan that the front half of the fuselage was demolished, but not a scratch to the tail section. So we have some repair work to do in the wing we needed to rebuild the front edge of the fuselage, but the balsa buzzard will fly again. A tip to avoid the situation to anyone else. We think the failsafe aired because we did not rebind after finding the throttle was reversed on the DX9. When I reversed the throttle, the DX9 actually prompted me to rebind the receiver and mentioned something about a failsafe, but I decided to do it later as we were not going to fly tonight. Remember that?
Yeah.
What could go wrong? Uh-huh. So if your DX9 suggests you should rebind right now.
Yeah. Lessons learned. That's great.
Don't assume anything.
No. By the way, he says... as to why the receiver cut out in the first place, though, we're blaming our beloved DSM-2 receiver.
Yeah.
We've resolved only to go into DSM-X and haven't had any problems.
Right.
Ooh, that's a good story.
Yes, yes, yes.
The ones lesson you can learn learned. From are great.
Yep. Oh, that isn't what I wanted to do. Let's see, where were we? Ooh, hope I didn't lose that. That was Nelson. Okay.
There's a lot more that you got to think about before maidening. I mean, they're really, with the more experienced pilots, they kind of fly through some things that you really don't want to overlook when you're going to maiden a plane. That's for sure.
Right. This one's by Matt. He's Mr. Gyro, and he's from England. So he's got just a cool, quick little story. Hi, Chris. Love the podcast. Always listen to Mike's laugh is fantastic.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Here's my crash story. A mate of mine just finished building his new tricopter based on David Vindenstoll's design. We had literally just finished putting it together and wanted to test it out and make sure it was all working. I like this story, too. We both work in a school. It was the school holidays, and it was raining outside. No bother. We thought we would just use the drama theater. It's big enough to do a little test flight, right?
What could go wrong?
Did he say it was the drama?
The drama theater. Yeah.
Is that appropriate or what?
We grabbed the radio and the tricopter, walked down to the drama theater, and got ready to fly. We placed the tricopter on the floor, powered on the transmitter. We noticed that the battery cover for the transmitter had been left behind in our office. We had forgotten it because we had just charged the transmitter battery. We plugged in the tricopter. Oh, man, I can't stop laughing at this. This is funny. We plugged in the tricopter and checked it out, and it was ready to fly. We took it out of safe mode and popped it into a hover. It worked perfectly. It just sat there in a hover nice and stable. We have done a great job.
that's where it ends.
When it happened, the battery fell out of the back of the transmitter.
Knew that was coming.
Disconnecting the cable and turning the transmitter off. Oh, crap.
Yeah.
We had not set a failsafe. The tricopter went to full throttle and shot up to the roof. We both ran away like little schoolgirls, desperately trying to get out of the way of the spinning blender of death.
Oh man!
We can hear the smashing. We can hear it smashing in the face.
Trauma theater.
I do imagine we're out of here. This thing's in there. Just
what the heck? Run for your life!
Then
probably all
foam. Oh my gosh! Absolutely. Then a brief moment of quiet followed by a thud. Oh. The tricopter landed in front of us in bits on the floor. It had gotten bashed around so badly that the battery had finally disconnected and shut it down. Next time, we'll put the battery cover on the transmitter.
Yeah.
Oh,
man.
They love to live dangerously, obviously.
Oh, my gosh.
What could go wrong?
Story.
Nope.
Oh, my gosh. That's funny. Okay, got another one here from, we'll see, how long have we been going here? An hour and 39 minutes. Maybe we'll go a few more here. Oh, man, my eyes are watering for that one. This one's from Devin, and he's from Melbourne, Australia. Longtime listener, a big fan, a first-time emailer. I have a story I think you may appreciate. Are we still on?
Never.
Oh, okay. We had some family friends who just bought a house on the countryside estate with backyard access to the lake. It was a beautiful property, and the owner had just been trying to get into the hobby. We had only just bought a few of those mini RC helicopters that you can buy from the shopping centers, but he wanted to get into something bigger and better. I had also just bought my dad an Icon A5 for Father's Day, so we thought, what better to inspire our friends than taking down the Icon to his house and giving him a little flying demo on his lake in his backyard. That would sure get him into the hobby. So, Dad and I were all excited. We packed a plane, drove down to his place. It was a little windy that day, but that didn't deter us. We got the battery strapped in place and made our way through the backyard to the lake. The whole family came. This is where you get everybody together like we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
We got the battery strapped in place, made our way through his backyard to the lake. The whole family came down to watch. So, some of the neighbors also. There would have been about maybe 8 people watching this. I had plenty of flight time on the Icon, so no matter how confident you can be, once you have an audience, it can be a little nerve-wracking. So the pressure was on. Dad set the plane on the lake, but the only part of the lake that we could easily access was a little weedy. There was a few plants around. As I was trying to taxi out, the plane got 2 plants caught on each wing. I looked at Dad, and he told me, just power through it. You'll be all right.
Oh, no.
So I gave it a burst of power, which instead of hopping over the plants as we expected, it rolled over upside down.
Oh, yeah.
Not a good start.
No.
Dad had to go in the water and flip it back over, which took a little while, resolving him and getting him wet up to his knees. He was not impressed. Anyway, the plane was on the water, right side up. And the moment everyone was waiting for. She was ready to go, and into the wind, I gave her full throttle. She started moving. As she gathered speed, I noticed something wasn't right. She wasn't tracking properly, and it was all over the place, and there were some bushes approaching. I had to commit to take off. I pulled back, and she leaped into the air. She climbed pretty quickly, but as I finally realized, something was wrong. She was not responding to the controls. The aircraft flew almost vertical and then lost its speed and stalled before going full nose in into the lake. And this is crazy, too. It went nose in, full throttle, and foam pieces soon littered the lake. So that hit that water and just disintegrated.
Like concrete at that point.
It was such an embarrassing moment that even more embarrassing swim of shame to collect the pieces. Not that you want it to happen, especially trying to showcase your plane and try to get others into the hobby. Anyway, sorry if this is a little long, but yeah, that was his crash story. So... a couple other little questions. But yeah, do you imagine you get it? Same thing. You get all your people around, I've flown that plane 100 times.
Yep.
What could go wrong?
Yeah,
just like Pat when his transmitter battery and it went through the fence. We did the same flights 100 times.
Right,
and it's stuff like that always. And that's the worst, too, is you want to get people excited about it, and they see this thing go up in the air, turn around, come down, and go into a million pieces, and you're like, oh.
Hey, Andre, you're watching Periscope, correct?
I think it went down.
I think it timed out.
Oh, it did time out.
Oh, that could be.
I was just wondering what questions came through, if any stuck in your mind as we were doing this to make it kind of more valuable for us.
So I wonder how long it goes. Half hour, 40 minutes?
An hour, I'd say.
An hour?
You might want to check it, because just in case the battery died on it. Died.
Oh, that could be, too. I'm worried about it.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, was there any interesting questions coming through Periscope or not?
There was a little bit, but like I said, it's clicked off now. So.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah, we'll just, it was kind of a test thing anyway. Oh, yeah. Now we know it works. Yeah. We can, no problem.
Is that why it didn't come up on yours then?
Probably. Yeah, it was already done.
I see.
I'll have to try to watch a little bit of it maybe later and see how it looks. This is from, let me get his name, Peter. This is my first time story submitter. I say I lost and crashed a lot. I live in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and this is a particular area, neighborhood, and park where I was flying a significant amount of trees in the area. I was flying my Ultramicro radio, and the winds were gusting 5 to 10 miles an hour. I have flown in winds like that before and had no problems until today. At the park, there is a small parking lot up on the hill overlooking a semi-small grass field. I parked my truck into one of the spots, and it was backed in the way I could sit on my tailgate while I was flying. I put one battery through it and had a great 30-minute or so flight. After picking it up and setting it back down on my tailgate, I grabbed another battery and plugged it in. I did not say, think, or mutter those flight ending, repair making, famous last words, just one more time. I gave it throttle sentence on its way, thinking it was going to be a nice long flight for this one. It quickly rose into the bright blue sky, and when I got about 80 to 90 feet above the treetops, it rose even faster.
Uh-oh.
I cut the throttle right away and was turning it in and diving it, but it just kept on going. By now, it was a speck, and I was unable to control it. I had no idea what direction it was going. I couldn't tell if it was coming back to me or not. The gust of wind had taken it past the park. I could see it, and it was porpoising here and there, but I put it into a couple of dives, but I couldn't tell if I ever had pointed it towards me to bring it back. I finally got just above some trees off in the distance, maybe a half mile away or more. All I could do now was cut the throttle and turn off my transmitter as I watched it go behind the tree line. I packed up my truck, got in, and started driving in the general direction of where it went down. I didn't spend too much time looking for it, so I wrote it off as a laugh to myself, and oh well. Love listening to the podcast and all the crash stories. Yeah. I thought that was kind of fun, to know you're not going to get it back, and you're like, it's done. Yeah. It's done.
That kind of like my H quad.
Yeah.
I just knew.
And sometimes you just kind of just sit there and look for a little while and you're like,
this is hopeless. What should
I? Yeah. 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 Yeah.
I'll tell you, getting disoriented at a distance, that is probably one of the worst feelings. I was out at Bixler's place flying once, and I think it was my Sky Surfer. I got out so far, I could not determine the orientation. Thankfully, He knew how to bring it back for me, but it is such an uncomfortable feeling when you get out beyond your capabilities and orienting a plane. It's like, oh.
Now I'm going to share this story. It's not too wildly crazy, but it's kind of funny because if you guys remember, I told a story probably multiple times about when I went down to Distel Island and took my radio and left my carbon rod on the roof. Right?
Yes, I remember that.
So a gentleman writes in, he was going to Adesto Island and was taking some stuff, and guess what? He forgot some. And you're out in the middle of nowhere. So I just wanted to, I thought it was kind of funny that he kind of had the same thing, so I'm going to share it with you real quick. Listening to the podcast, I am cleaning the office. I had to share my recent adventures. Luckily, nothing was really broken except my pride. Late April, I took my four-year-old daughter on an airplane for the first time that we could go on vacation at Adesto Island, South Carolina. I debated seriously if it was worth even bringing my quad. I had limited supply of props. I'm an expert at crashing, so I was worried about bringing only one quad. I normally break them so quickly. Anyhow, the day before my trip, Banggood came through with from 80 props to my front door.
Wow.
I packed up my ZMR into my luggage, stripping all my FPV gear from my base station and bagging it up. I arrive in South Carolina without incident, and when I go to fly, I discover my XT-60, Fat Shark pigtail in my base station, which is now 1,200 miles away.
No.
So I call a friend and have him pop over to my house and overnight the cable to me. I get my FPV gear on, take on, and fly out to the beach and back a few times. Then with plenty of altitude, I pop up and hit the flip, and I land in a palm tree. I don't know if you've ever crashed a quad in a palm tree, but they have the stringy things that are very strong to suck your quad right into the heart of the tree. Now, again, it's hard to grasp, but you're really out in the middle of nowhere, nothing around, no hardware, nothing.
And palm trees aren't short.
Yes. So he says, keep in mind that I'm an hour away from any form of civilization. I find a chunk of wood and throw at it a few times. Despite a few solid hits, the strings kept me good and anchored. So I hop in the golf cart and start looking around for anyone, painting, with a ladder, whatever. I'm ready to fork over some cash and have someone help me out. I come around the corner and see a couple guys standing next to a huge boat that has a push pole on the side that's easily 30 feet long. I offered them $20 to let me use their pole, and they said, sure. After a few minutes, the quad is recovered. They refuse the $20 and ask me to do a little demonstration. I throw a fresh battery in and put it in the air, letting them ride on the FPV goggles for a little light acro.
Oh, that's nice. Great. Very good.
Great. He can reciprocate with that.
That's a good ending there.
Yeah. But I know his feeling because that place is literally, and you get that hot flash, like, what am I going to do now?
Right.
You know? Let's see. Oh, this one's kind of funny, only because I have had this happen to me. Mike, maybe you've had this happen too. This is from Caden Gunter, and I think he sent in some stories before.
That sounds familiar, that name.
I went to my brother's baseball game with only a few planes, and I was going to repair only, no flying. After finishing both planes, I put them in the car. When we got home, I started unloading the car. I grabbed the first plane and came in with my FT Mini guinea pig. I went back out to the room, put it away, and I went and got a drink. I forgot the other plane, the Ultra Micro Beast without AS3X, which was still in my mom's back seat. Unfortunately, the seat it was in was foldable. If you haven't figured out where this is going, she went to the grocery store 2 days ago and folded down the seat.
Of course.
When she got home, I realized my plane was still in the car. Unfortunately, it was destroyed. I don't have the money to repair it, and this time I don't plan on fixing it anytime soon. I have done that. I couldn't tell you how many times I had it on the seat, folded the seat down.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So that's something just conscious to think about.
Yeah. When you're done, put it away.
Keep your planes accounted for.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the, you know, you're grabbing your stack of equipment. I'm like, oh, I'll just grab all the bins in one shot. You get to the door and you try to open the door and it's sliding. Nope, I've stopped doing that. I've stopped taking multiple planes in my hands.
Yep.
My UMX Radiant, and I crunched a wing a little just going out the door with other planes in my hands. Yep. That's a great point. And I think I've made that point too, to just in travel, always carry just one plane, no matter how many trips it may save. It's going to save you in the long run by not damaging them.
Ooh, this one's really long. I may save this one.
But I could see that happening with folding, because in my Explorer, I had that thing jammed full of planes. I mean, trying to stay accounting all the stuff and have all the materials in there and everything else.
Okay, this one's pretty funny. This is by Keith Westfall, and he might have sent in some too before. Hey, Chris, hope everything's good in Ohio. I'm missing the Midwest, moved here from Iowa, but out here in Utah, everyone has a sprinkler system. And I just found out the park across the street has sprinklers that come on at 9. I was doing some FPV at dusk.
How did you find out?
I was doing some FPV at dusk, mainly because it's pretty hot during the day, and got through a few batteries and had a two-prop crash. So I was changing out props and battery when I hear the faint gurgling of water. My stomach immediately sank. Picture this. All of your batteries, goggles, transmitter, and everything electronic all laid out under a tree where it's nice and cozy. Now imagine scrambling to get everything picked up before the sprinkler is full on.
Oh my
In my
gosh.
Head, I was yelling, no!
Oh my gosh, this is horrible.
And trying to decide what to pick up first.
Exactly.
Because it can... It can only be one thing that makes it.
Saves it, yeah.
So I throw my quad and the batteries in a box and run away hoping it was far enough. And sprint back to get the rest of my stuff. Luckily, the spray hit me in the face only, and it rained on the electronics a little. So as I sit here in a wet shirt writing this, I am hoping all my stuff dries out so I can fly tomorrow. But if you have time, it may not hurt to PSA to remind folks of public park sprinkler systems and to be conscious of when they are turning on. Sometimes they are morning, sometimes they are evening.
Oh, man.
Keep up the great podcast.
Well, the good thing is there's no power. If there's no batteries hooked up to it, it's fine.
Yeah.
It just dry it out.
Yeah.
Now, if it does have a battery, unhook it.
Yeah.
Don't try to run away. Just hurry up and unhook the battery.
Right. I have a ton more, but we're almost 2 hours. I'm losing my voice. So I think we'll cut it there. How's that?
Sounds good.
All right, and like maybe next podcast we'll throw a few more in after
a couple.
Exactly.
I think that's great. It.
Yeah, that tricopter story was hilarious.
But there are some great stories. Whether you think it's a good story or not, send it in. Yeah. You know, sometimes people think it's no good, and
that drama theater. I won't forget that one for a while.
That is really good. So we thank everyone for hanging out with us. Let us know about the Periscope thing. Maybe we'll try to do that a little more. This is kind of an unusual.
We definitely need to be able to see the questions that are coming. Somehow, some way.
We can do that.
You had yours, didn't you? Yeah.
And
just said it. Here.
I didn't think about it. I do have another tablet sitting right here.
You guys are killing me. I wanted to see what people were writing.
We need a bigger desk. You know, we're because
you could have just set that there.
I could have. I didn't think about it.
That's part of the periscoping aspect. You get the interaction.
So we can do that too. Periscope. We can answer some questions. And see how that goes.
And I even got a phone holder that I could probably modify that we can stick a phone in here and just lock it down.
Yeah.
Use that, and then that way you can keep your iPad.
Put some power to it so it doesn't drain.
Oh yeah.
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 Well, you're right. So hopefully next podcast we'll get in here and do some product reviews. Hopefully I'll have a little time. And Wayne, I want you on the Phantom too. I'm going to let you crank that thing around.
We need to get more flying in so we have these stories.
We'll go from there. So thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for following us. I don't know what's going on with Periscope and Instagram again. Our followers on Instagram, if you look late, I think we're close to 3,000. Yeah. That's insane to me. That's just crazy. Awesome.
That's great.
So hopefully we'll get some more stuff up there for you. And other than that, I think thanks, Mike, Wayne, Andre, for joining us, dragging you down here this early. We have lots of donuts left.
I tried dragging Chad in, but he's in L.A., that's going to be a hard drag.
We'll definitely get Chad in here.
Seems interesting. Good. I keep bringing it up to him. So.
Yep.
And this is only early for some people.
Yeah.
Some of us already been up for three or four hours.
I'm feeling pretty good. I went to bed a decent hour.
Good. I know me personally. You know, I work outside in the heat and everything. A lot of times I get in here on a Tuesday evening, and I'm just – trying.
Oh yeah.
You know, oh yeah.
I got my coffee. I'm energized. Mornings for me. I do way better. Oh, yeah. So we'll see.
Well, we both wake up at crazy hours in the morning anyway. Yeah. So,
but thanks everyone for listening. We're going to get out of here and I don't know, go enjoy the weekend.
Oh yeah.
Hopefully you guys you guys get out and enjoy the flying. Tomorrow
afternoon would be good farm weather.
Ooh, maybe.
Southwest winds.
Baseball. We've got to sit down and say, today we are flying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I
got to start planning some stuff out. I have noticed the weather is starting to change a little bit. Yeah, Andre, have you noticed? Like this morning, I think it was 53 degrees this morning. Yeah. The steam rolling off my pool this morning was like, oh no, not
I
yet.
Know.
The leaves, I got leaves falling. I'm not ready.
No.
I'm just not ready.
I am.
So, listen to Mike. We gotta get you a little camera or something for that tree stand. Probably some good entertainment up there, no?
You can periscope.
Yeah, you can periscope from your tree stand.
Oh, God, he'd be falling out of the tree. Or he'd be laughing like this, and there won't be an animal within 5 miles.
Nothing around.
I never thought of that. Periscope some deer under the tree. That'd be neat.
All right, guys, we're out of here. We keep babbling on, so we'll see you and talk to you in a couple weeks. Enjoy your weekend.
See you guys.
See you guys.
Cheers, bye.